Hello and welcome to Starter Set. My name, Ed Sylvester. This is
Sam Bradley.
And welcome to the show that rewrites myths and legends.
Ooh.
Hello, Sam. A little bit of a different show today, obviously. How are you feeling? You all good?
Well, we just spent 10 minutes talking about musical theatre, so I'm quite angry.
Not a fan.
Well, no, obviously. So I'm quite riled up, so I think that should make for a better show.
It'll certainly add an energy, I think, is fair to say.
Angry energy.
angry energy. But listen, hey, man. We've finished season one, or arc one, whatever we want to call it, of Beowulf, Age of Eardwulf. And now we just get to talk about it and what we thought about it and our experience.
I liked it. Good night, everybody.
And the experience and things that went well or didn't go as well or whatever it is. Yeah, which is kind of interesting. I'm quite excited for this.
A story? That's my first question to you.
Are you easy to manage through a story?
Yeah.
Oh,
Sylvester mused.
Yeah, yes. I'm quite literally rubbing my chin.
Mm.
Yes. But, now this is a yes but.
Okay.
I think because you and me have role played together for quite a while.
Oh, have we?
And I also obviously know the way that your mind works a little bit, not all of it, because I think if I did, I'd have to go into hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the things that I can like put in front of you to try and tempt you in a certain direction.
Nice.
There were points where, and I think this is the thing that you struggle with, is some things are just things, you know what I mean?
But everyone struggles with that. It's like
with D&D, right? Yeah,
yeah. It is because tricky. You can't see it. You know, is it glowing? Is it humming?
Yeah.
Is it?
Is it a death cube? So things like fishing for wolves was quite an interesting.
Oh yeah.
Thought process when
was
you
that
tried
episode
that.
Two or three.
Yeah. I thought that was weird.
Wolfie.
That was pretty fucking weird. But no, to short answer, no, not for myself, but also, I think if I was a new DM, maybe yes.
Mm.
But as I said, we've had experience playing together like for years now, so
yeah,
I think it's pretty easy, which is why I think we have the trust to be able to do the show in the first place.
Yeah,
and that's
that
the
makes
other
sense.
Thing. Because with this, like, you, Sam, have to then trust me as well to, like, know that that things are going to places. So, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, I think I trust you. But yeah, I think that is a level of trust, isn't it? That you have to know your DM. I mean, you're lucky if you know your DM that well.
Mm. Yeah,
but
for
I think
sure.
I never even consider it. That's how much trust there is there. It's not even a thought that I have. Like, oh, right. Maybe he's leading me up the garden path.
Like what's the point of this? Like all that sort of thing, kind of thing. Like this seems silly and
yeah,
not
exactly.
at all attached to it. But like knowing that actually something will come out of it is a big part of it.
Yeah.
But do you know what? That's a really nice thing to ask, Sam. I appreciate you asking me.
Thank you.
Just as a reflective area. That's
well,
quite
it
good.
Is because I'm aware that like another thing that kind of gets me is that I'm a sort of forever DM, really.
Mm.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Of my D&D career, I think I've played, like, way less than I've DM'd. Regular listeners will know that. So, like, playing for me is kind of like, not only is it like, oh, you're playing, but it's also like, oh, holy shit, I get to play.
Mm.
I get to run around in someone else's sandbox. And
yeah.
Sometimes the shackles come off, are like, too much, and you're like, well, I can just go. He'll account for it, because it's not my turn to account for it. See you later, baby.
I invent a boat. The boat has an engine. I drive the boat. The engine, yeah. The boat is
they
now
worship playing. Me as a god. They call me Terry Sheeverballs.
Terry Sheeverballs. Love it. That's the next character.
And he talks like this.
So that's that. So, and the other thing is as well, I think when running this kind of stuff is the adaptability and how that kind of runs together. So because I think we're both not like, I'm not going to say like really good storytellers, but I think because we've both told stories like this in this format before.
Yeah. You definitely look for the beats as a player.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you definitely looking for, like, I know you say, oh, sometimes you're just looking for the turn too much, but at least I'm looking for the turn. It's not like, okay, so what happens next?
Mm.
Well, the goat talks. Wow, what happens then? You know, he screams into the void.
Yeah, I like that though. Wow, what next? Could you imagine if that was, well, I mean, I don't know if that is the case, if anybody's ever played
that's with like reverse like that. It's like reverse improvisation, isn't it? Improvisation, they say the rule is like you go yes and I'm here to do this, yes and, but like the opposite is like, okay, what happens next?
And yes,
he's wearing no trousers but shoes and socks. Cool, what happens next? He asks you for a ridiculous product. Wonderful, what happens next? You're in a hospital.
Get him the product. Yeah. Love it. So yeah, nice and easy.
It's kind of like that bit, you know, in The Simpsons where the dude sells them the monorail and he goes, a town with a monorail is like a town with money is like a mule with a spinning top. Damned if he knows how to use it. And everyone laughs except Homer, who laughs and then goes, mule. Like, it's
brilliant.
He's in there, but it's for totally the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Love it. So look, let's if we bring this then to experiencing the story, because obviously, like, you, when we start playing, Erdewolf was quite blank canvassy, right?
Yes.
And then, so give us like a little bit of the timeline, I guess, breakdown of like his headspace, where you thought you wanted to go with it, how that didn't necessarily come around.
I thought initially that we would open and what Erdewolf became 3 or 4 shows in, the huckster, the con artist, the self-obsessed, I thought that was going to be like, you wash up on the beach, you're poked by a little boy. Come on, mister, you're in. Hold fast. You got to get up. It's the first day of Whitsuntide or something like that.
Mm.
And we would go straight into it. When we started playing it and I was like, oh, 2 episodes in and I hadn't met anyone. And it was like survival. I was like, this is so different, but this is fucking awesome. Like, I remember thinking, this is great. This is a really good idea to take a one-on-one campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it shifted, and that was fun, but for totally different reasons than meeting up with Brynjolf was fun. Because that finally got me to sort of improvise and role play more.
Yeah.
And then it was a really nice sort of inverted pyramid of learning to interact with the world. Because first there's no one, there's just you. Then there's one person. And then there's a town of people.
Yeah.
So that was very, very well done. I don't know if that was obviously it was a conscious choice to some extent, because you were like, he's going to be on his own, then he's going to meet Brynjolf, then they're going to escape, and then they're going to be at the town. But I wonder if it was a conscious decision in the way that it was like a very slowly lowering me into the game.
Yeah. I'll half answer that one on that front. So the idea... Number one, I just thought it would be fun just to do a little bit of that survival piece, because I've never actually done that from a DM's perspective before, of actually like trying to find food. And
but you can't do that in Dungeons & Dragons, because you've always got a crew of at least 2 or 3 people.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same dynamic. Sorry. Continue.
No, I agree. I 100% agree. And the idea of being in the wilderness doesn't... If there's 5 of you, it's a camping trip. If it's 1 of you, it's good God, I might die. It's
death. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, because the setting kind of demands it, it needs to be such a sparsely populated area.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to get that across, that you can walk for days in a direction and not meet anyone, which is impossible to do for like 2 hours in the UK now.
Mm. Which it's kind of emphasized the lo-fi nature of the world.
Exactly. Not much like big magic, all mystical magic, all visions and mists and... the unseen and you know, fairies living in the trees and all that kind of, like, you put an iron horseshoe above your door and that actually stops evil witches. Spirits coming in. And yeah,
but that's nice though, because it forced me to make a bigger character, the puffin shit. Like,
you gave
me a much blanker canvas than, like, you usually dropped in a town. You can do what you want, but you're bound by the rules of the town.
Mm-hmm.
But not here.
The puffin threw me, I'm not going to lie. When that started, I was like... this seems strange. And then I kind of got I sort of figured it out. I was like, okay, this is the because your character has a trait which is I wear many faces, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah, and it took me a little while to know what you were doing with that, and I realized, okay, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Bizarre that you went down like the idea of taking on this sort of Batman-esque mm-hmm. puffin thing, but it kind of helped push that. Number one, D&D shouldn't be serious all the time, so it adds a little bit of levity to it, especially in that situation where it's just like just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And you need to chuck that in, otherwise it's weird. But I liked it. Like, it helped me then generate the idea. And obviously you can see how that then fed in towards some of those ending scenes, especially mm-hmm. when we meet the reflections.
Yeah.
Which, as I said, I hadn't planned until that morning we were going to record. And yeah, I texted you going like, dude, I can't record today because I need to figure this out. But like,
that was so, forgive me, let me finish the point. Mm. That was so fucking tropey, but it was so well placed that he's a con man and he has to fight versions of himself, but he has to fight them alongside versions of his actual self.
Mm-hmm.
Really great, mm-hmm. like really like obvious, but... Obvious, by which I mean it's like a common storytelling trope. For that kind of thing.
For sure.
But it was so well placed and it was so fucking well done.
That,
like you don't mind. Like, it was really good.
Yeah.
And I say, again, I say trope, but I didn't expect it. But as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, this is fucking great. This is really where you do this.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea of that. So this actually sort of reflects one of the questions and kind of brings it naturally into it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think two people sort of asked, like, how... I can't actually find it at the moment. Where's that gone? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Did you, Ed, change up your story much from how I originally set it out for play? So that is a direct response to... The initial story was you were going to go to... The shipwreck works, so mm-hmm. shipwreck happens. We take everything away so that you can then relearn the idea
great
of, like...
Great opening scene, by the way.
Exactly. That sounds so congratulatory, doesn't it?
No, it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah, I do you know what? I'd love to re-record that personally, just from a... Because I look back at it and I'm nervous, basically, because I'm DMing for the first time and the nerves have got to me at that one.
The sea itself, but it's still great.
Yeah, exactly. But that triggered... As we got through and further into things, that idea with the wolves...
Mm.
They were initially just going to be wolves, like normal wolves, a little bit scary. But like reading the book and going into that, the original main villain was going to be basically a spurned witch type thing who had been promised something by the local lord mm-hmm. and that local lord had broken his promise.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, to that degree. And now she was coming in the night and... taking a soul each night, and these people would wake up as like husks, so
mm-hmm.
so they're still alive, which is like worse than just like coming along and murdering people, but they're just mm-hmm. like there's nothing there, blank, and it's but never ever the Lord himself,
right? And that would have been the he's never been
and he would know what's going on, basically. And that was the original plan. You would then go out and you would find her sister, who kind of still fits in that area where mm-hmm. Pruda lives.
Yeah.
And she would then give you somewhat of the key to find out what's going on, which would have been her natural name, her real name, rather than like,
yeah.
you know what I mean? You go in, you say like, hello, Bob. Sandra.
Yeah, Sandra.
Yeah.
yeah.
And she's like, my name, a real Sandra name. And then the defeated position comes into it. Mm-hmm. That obviously then went out the window when we started talking about that. And I think it was almost like a little throwaway line. I think because you started to commit to this puffin character, I switched it up and we started to get those lupine... traits coming in, the control, the lack of control. And again, I didn't really know where I was going with that until a little bit later on, and I figured out what if there's something in the area that's impacting the way that people live and operate.
Interesting.
So it was just before we got to Brynjolf
mm-hmm.
where the idea of the Cain spawn came into it, because I was listening to the Beowulf audiobook, the Seamus Heaney translation,
mm-hmm.
and he said a single throwaway line. Like, I was falling asleep, put my audiobook on, falling asleep, and he said, "All monsters were born of Cain," and I like fucking shot up, like sweaty faced, like heart pumping 1,000 miles an hour, and I was like, that's really good. Why don't we just like condense that down and actually make that a thing? Like the first murder, all that kind of stuff.
And it links into the biblical stuff as well.
Exactly. And then I was like, okay, so we get the Adam and Eve, the corruption thing, Cain and Abel are their sons. So why don't we just take that corruption and we start weaving that throughout the whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the fall of Eve and the temptation thing. And like, if eating an apple is that start of the thing, how the hell does it get to murder?
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, so if murder's how that works, then it's just a loss of the humanity piece. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's then how we started losing our humanity through becoming these lupine creatures in that banding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you've got the map in front of you, there's
pretend I do.
There's basically like an invisible line that's drawn across the island. In that banding, you are subject to the loss of your humanity and the primal need to hunt, kill, and eat.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move into the Brynjolf area, right? Which obviously we start losing our ability to commit
our humanity, though, if you think about it.
Exactly. So this it's still the Cain spawn. It's still the same thing. It's just different ways. So you start forgetting the thing that you were trying to do. You become distracted. You become like
slothful.
Yeah, or it was more a reflection of what's the thing where you don't do the thing that you're meant to do and you just do minor little tasks.
Procrastination.
You know what I mean? Procrastination. That was procrastination corner.
Right, okay.
And you finding Brynjolf there. And those, by the way, this is a little spoiler, so I think it'll come in. It'll be one of the things when we revisit, because I'm planning out how that works. So the wolves in that area are not wolves. They are humans who have been taken, and the effect has just played out completely.
Bastards.
So, which is why they had, when you visited the cave, there was some rags, little collections of, because wolves have no need for clothing.
No, I thought they'd eaten other people. I don't know. I was too busy. No,
exactly.
Pissing myself.
Yeah. and it's why they were intelligent and why they could track you and
lay traps, the fuckers.
Exactly. There's something a little bit more there, but I'll leave that until the next arc. So that's that piece. Then we go on to the procrastination area, where Brynjolf has obviously been there. He doesn't know how long. He spent time. You start affecting that. And the thing is if we're on our own, you never really see the fact that you're procrastinating. You know what I mean?
Like, no,
you
just go, that's good, yeah.
Oh, God, it's been an hour. All right.
Let's smoke some fish.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea and introduction of another character to kind of be aware of that is how that can obviously be broken out. Rescue Brynjolf. We start traveling down the thing. We have our experience with our crab-faced, our human-faced crab boys.
Fuck that.
Which, again, was just a little bit of a throwaway thing that I just was like, I'll chuck in some mysticism, some weirdy stuff. I've been reading a couple of books recently. One of them is, because obviously I've moved to Scotland, but one of them's a really good child's folklore book about, it's all that sort of weird kind of folklore where things are
earthy folklore.
Yeah, earthy folklore. Like, there's lots of like extra blood and that kind of stuff that you probably shouldn't tell your kids, but it's good to tell your kids because they kind of like experience the world in a more visceral way, I guess. Yeah. It's like, you know, the classic, don't go and feed the fairies, or if you feed the fairies, make sure you
hop.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, they'll come and take your knees. and there's a really good one, actually. Next time you come up to visit, Sam, I'm going to take you to a place which is called Alaw, L-A-W, and it's basically a cap on a volcanic bit of rock.
Okay.
And it just pops out of the land, and there's a really good story that's associated with it, which I'll tell you then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things. And that inspired those crab guys, because I was like, well, look, this, let's figure that out. And then obviously later on we see the revisiting of that. Then we get to the area where there are people. There are people, lots of people. So now we start ramping up the sort of jealousy, the mistrust, mm-hmm. the stuff that other people, the paranoia that only other people create for other people.
Yeah.
And that's where the Cain spawn starts to kind of really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
We go slightly north and we reach that banding again where it's the wolf and the primal thing. And that's why you found Pruda mm-hmm. in that half state, because she'd been living out there
mm-hmm.
and had begun to turn the way she had turned.
Yeah.
That's that piece. Now, one thing that I'm really excited about, or that again came to me just as a point of serendipity, which is the boys.
Yeah,
so screw those kids. Those kids were just meant to be dicks to begin with.
Mm.
But then the idea of this Cain spawn, this thing from Cain and Abel, who were brothers,
mm-hmm.
came into fruition.
Yeah.
And twin brothers. And I was like, what if they're just not affected by it?
Because they're twins.
Because they're
twins. That was the thing, was it?
Yeah, that's just that. Yeah, just the little reflection behind there, which is...
No, I like that, yeah.
Great. But this is... I'm basically getting to the position where the way I realised to tell these stories for Beowulf, and because of what Beowulf is, is monster first and then work backwards.
I think that's how they write Doctor Who.
I think, yeah.
Jokes aside, I think if you look at the structure of a Doctor Who episode or any of that, like, villain of the week shit, that's how they do it.
Yeah, and it should be. Like, that works really well. And for D&D games particularly, and I've said this before, you know, we've got the Cabal of the Undying is the one from my home game. Recurring villains is always great because it emotes something. The idea of that being the focus is always good, because it's just like, you don't need to have any moral questions. And don't get me wrong, like, doing a moral story where you, like, are we the bad guys? Are we the good guys? Are there bad and good guys, or is it just people trying to live? That's always a good experience. And it makes you sort of think about things, but sometimes you just want to put on X-Men and you know, watch Magneto get beaten up by Cyclops.
But even then, there's a moral quandary there.
True.
There is a moral quandary there.
What, with X-Men?
Or yeah, just yeah, in, something like that, to sort of frame that as the, like, oh, it's bad versus good. You might as well put on fucking... I don't know, like a Western or some shit.
So the really good thing between those ways of telling stories, and this is where you come into like your own as well, Sam, because you're very good at that morally questionable, like
mm-hmm.
what's good and evil and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And you brought Erdwolf into it, basically, who is questionable.
A questionable moral blank.
Exactly. And I don't know if you figured that out because of what you were experiencing, or if that was just the way you wanted to run that character.
A little of both, to be honest, because I kind of wanted to be able to sit in it and open up alleyways for comedic intention.
Mm-hmm.
And go into it with... The Doctor needs someone to explain the world to, so I had to be that person. Because I had to be a reason that characters talk to each other. So I think to go in as the everyman and to play it like that, and to play it in a way that you can kind of trick your way into other conversations, that was a conscious thing.
Mm.
And then a lot of it spanned from there.
Yeah, I think that's also... When we met Brynjolf, I didn't know what character he was going to be.
Mm. Interesting.
Like, he was just a guy who had lost his son, a fisherman.
Yeah.
And then, like, the way that you started talking to him, he kind of fell into that malleable but moral, if that makes sense.
Somebody had to be.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got the Colonel, who, like, knows his...
He's the explainer. He's the knowledge. He's the... Yeah.
Yeah, but he's also solid, you know, in like his faith and his want and his and his knowledge of what is good or bad. Like, it's like, no, this is, I'm straight to the line and I know what I think is right, regardless of whether it is or not. I found doing the companions really fun. There's another couple that I planned for who haven't come to fruition yet. but I'm really looking forward to those happening. Mm-hmm. Just because, and one of them's been named by a listener as well, who supported us throughout, which is very nice.
Whoa!
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting. So
when I meet Mrs. Grimy Slimy Pants, I'll know who to thank.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's. It's such an interesting way to run games, basically, because, and the book, the rule book gives you followers, actually more, with less weight, I would say. They give you followers like ammunition almost.
Yeah, because they have like a set sort of 5, 6, 7 things they can do.
Yeah.
Outside of the sort of nonsensery of it all.
Yeah. And your crew is like 25 plus people as a standard, right? So it seems like there's a separation between what that looks like. And I think the way, because we approached it from a bottom-up kind of experience, it meant that the followers that we have much more swing in terms of telling our story.
Yeah, of course.
Which is good.
Because they become characters, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
They literally become characters within the story.
Exactly. Less followers, more characters. And I'm looking forward to seeing those characters evolve and see where they get to.
Yeah.
And see what they become and what trials they undergo. I mean, Brynjolf has had like a massive revelation.
He's had a real thing, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's brilliant. one of the comments was like... Brynjolf, like you being like the hilarity of you being hurt, like horrified that we should use Colonel as a sacrificial goat.
Obviously,
when just Brynjolf is literally
isn't he? He can fight back. If a sea monster takes a goat, the goat dies 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's good. Last question that I think actually comes to like the poignancy for doing this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very different from how you usually run D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Character death.
Yeah.
So the question is basically like, what would you do, Ed? What would you do? Or Sam, what would you do if Ed Wolf had end up dying?
We actually talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. So I had a plan if that was going to happen where Ed Wolf dies. There's no plot armor because number one, also as listeners, I'd like quite like you to experience that and how that works and how to kind of come back from that. Ed Wolf dies, no plot armor. And then we basically generate another character and we come back to this environment, but time has passed.
Yeah.
So we would see how that actually works.
Mm.
So what's the, you see the consequences of a hero dying as they do a fight as, and I don't know what that would have looked like. Maybe if we go 10 years, it would have been
bloody hell.
Like you find the ruins and it's just ruled over by a despotic. One of the children has survived.
Yeah.
Murdered the other one.
It's kind of like that cow kingdom in Rick and Morty, Hoofy.
I haven't seen that episode, but...
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like, it gets out. They go from, like, kindly farmhands to, like, this absolute insane sort of order of... Because Morty keeps jumping back. And for Morty, yes. It's, like, 10 seconds, 10 minutes, but for them, it's, like, years at a time.
Yeah, I get you. Yes, exactly like that. So that we still experience this story and this outcome and what is ultimately the main character of the story, which isn't Erdwolf or whichever the character the hero's been playing, it's the bad guy.
And we just keep fucking up until we reach the year 1990 and it's paved over and it becomes D&D.
Exactly. So maybe we return to, and it would be no questionable, like Osgood or Osgard, sorry, and it's ruled, it's basically a collection of untrusting, maybe like 5, 10 people, untrusting banditry types who have gone a bit feral.
Yeah.
We go a bit more Mad Max with the way that we operate.
Love it.
And we are chased and we are... And there I would have some guidance as part of that chasing and as part of how that all runs and works to find the Cain spawn, or in fact, maybe that has transferred ownership somewhat and the Cain spawn is now... inhabited the whichever one of the boys survived and has ruled that child.
Because there's the twins as well, isn't there? There's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, duopoly.
It's almost like the murder of the other boy would have been the breaking point that allowed Cain Spawn to come out of his area and become
what it is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we do some more listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it. What else have we got?
Who would you guys cast for some of the main cast for this season? Is the first one, and there's a couple more.
This is a very Sam question, because I think you enjoy these things.
I think, obviously, so you need to pick a voice actor. So who are we casting? Eardwulf Brynjolf, the voice actor behind Colonel, the two boys, and...
Sylvie. And Braw.
And I love that, so, like, Svilnhelmholm would probably have been, like, Bill Hader, out of nowhere, just for two episodes.
It would be like... What did I watch recently where... the Witcher series where Dylan Moran is in.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He just turns up at the end of that and it was like, what is that guy doing? It'd be like that. But let's start. Eardwulf. Who are you going to go with for Eardwulf?
I'm going to go with probably... I think it's Edward Norton.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, just because he's got that kind of nervous energy and he can do a lot of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see why you would do that. I don't particularly like Ed Norton personally, but
what?
It's okay, it's fine, you don't have to. You're all right.
We're not actually casting it, Sam. Calm down, the studios aren't listening. I think, him for Eardwulf, he has that nervous energy.
Mm-hmm.
Brynjolf, I think we probably could have aged up Christian Bale.
Really?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that surprises me. I get where you're coming from.
Who would you cast if not?
Brynjolf, I would probably go to the... I can tell you who it would be.
Go on.
I don't know his name, but I can tell you the character that he's been.
Fantastic.
It's the gentleman that played Viserys in...
Oh,
you haven't watched Game of Thrones?
No.
Oh, bloody hell. Okay, well, it would be him, but, like, aged up a fair bit.
How do you... What is that dude's name?
Don't worry, it's going to be so hard to find
it. Viserys. Targaryen.
Yeah.
Targaryen. His name is... This dude for fucking Brynjolf.
So obviously he's young at the moment.
Yeah, he is. Super young.
But I've recently seen him in another film, which
he
is about...
he looks like a Wish.com Michael Fassbender. Sorry, Harry.
That's fine. Like, perfect. That's all I want to need to say. What's his name?
Harry something. Harry Charles Salisbury Lloyd.
Cool. Him. So, but character actor, age him up. The reason why I do that is I recently watched him in a film about the digging up of Richard III.
Oh, with Steve Coogan.
Yes, yeah, really good, really good film actually, really not really enjoyable.
I haven't seen it, but I've got the DVD.
You'll enjoy it. It's a good British film. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't need any of those outsiders helping us make our films. Is that what you mean?
No, it's just a good British film. That's what I mean.
Say that again.
Because it has. You know that you wrote for bloody film.
You wrote for a film.
Film thing, yeah. Didn't you? Uh-huh. So you know what I mean when I talk about that. It's that flavour of Richard Curtis, but it's not Richard Curtis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think either Jim Broadbent or Tobias Menzies to voice Colonel. Tobias Menzies played Prince Philip in the middle two seasons of The Crown.
Yeah.
And Jim Broadbent.
That's not bad.
Go on.
I'm going to go with a little side swipe here.
Go on. Vin Diesel.
John C. Reilly.
Oh, shit. Now, he's definitely in it somewhere.
Because...
In a way, I think John C. Reilly might be fucking Eardwulf.
That's interesting. Because, you know, so obviously he does a lot of comedic roles, but like when John C. Reilly wants to do a legitimate role, that sounds like comedic roles aren't legitimate. You know what I'm saying.
I know, a straight role.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah, he's great.
I think I'd like to see him in that.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Who next?
The two boys, we would obviously cast the same actor.
Mm-hmm. But then do that like Winklevoss thing.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody who's up and coming within the theatre scene, I'd take, we'd go like, here's
Ethan Tremblay.
He
played the little boy in Room. Remember that?
Okay.
He was him. He's a very good actor.
Sylvie?
What is the woman... the fucking woman from Ted Lasso.
I haven't watched Ted Lasso.
No, I know.
I know who you mean.
I'm going to find the cast. I think it's Hannah someone. I haven't watched the show, but I know enough about it. Hannah Waddingham.
Okay,
she's the blonde lady that I believe... Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the show, sorry. She like owns Richmond
AFC. Yeah, yeah.
Her. She's also one of the nuns that says shame in Game of Thrones, apparently.
Yeah, okay.
So great. Her, because she's like got that weight, she's a great actress, obviously, and she can play that kind of fuck you, I hope you die, but also, okay, what are you saying? Mm-hmm, is this relevant? Mm-hmm. I think definitely her.
Perfect. And then I think we should probably actually cast the Kainspawn as well, because that's obviously
Fucking Benedict Cumberbatch doing a Smaug motion capture, or Andy Serkis, or one of those motion capture guys.
Anybody who's not asthmatic. Basically. That's the cast for sure. That's pretty good.
Maybe John C. Reilly is Brynjolf.
That's actually quite good.
Yeah, him and Edward Norton, and then fucking Jim Broadbent the goat put his heads up.
I think Jim Broadbent's too bouncy, if you know what I mean. The way he talks is too bouncy.
Who did you say for Colonel again?
I said John C. Reilly. But I feel like we need more of a like...
Maybe like Will Ferrell? I don't know, like deadpanning it?
No.
Bill Nighy?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
But like, hi Bill, could you just Shakespeare it all up a bit more, please, mate? Like let's really lean into the old English.
Yeah, not quite Ian McKellen.
Exactly. Don't go that far. Cool, yeah, that works. Lovely stuff.
Who do we have for Braw? Remind me, who's Braw?
Well, Braw doesn't talk, so
Vin Diesel.
No, Vin Diesel's too chunky for it. Thin, tall. Gleason.
Domhnall.
Yes.
Really? Is that how you saw Braw? Because I saw Braw.
Shave his head.
Done.
Like, give him like some facial scarring.
Mm.
I'm not sure. He might not be tall enough, but it's close to.
You need like a tanky boy. You need a Vin Diesel or a Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
No. So Braw is leather. Like in my head, he's leather. You know what I mean? Mm. Like so quite thin, quite not really like jacked, but hard in a way that is just
interesting.
That is tough old leather, old boots, been through a lot, like both physically and mentally. Like the idea that he has to stick to his duty no matter what happens around him, even if he knows that those boys are shitheads, he has to protect them because that's his duty. That's what he was commanded with.
I like to think that we could, like, remember Gertie? She was in it for like two scenes. We could get like Taylor Swift or someone in just to have her on set and just like have like a guest thing. And because then in the next episode, she's like, the goat can talk. And I was like, that's fucking Taylor Swift. And I'm directing. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah. So that's for you. That's just
it's just for me. It's just for me.
Julie Walters would be Gertie, personally.
What?
Come on.
We're going to talk about this. Yeah, she is, but...
And it's not something that is whatever that is over there.
Anyway, Grimdial asks...
Yeah, last one, I think.
What are the differences in it? What are the differences in expectations and reality for both of you? What, in general? Because, this podcast isn't long enough. Yeah,
how long you got for that one?
This could be the roles that religions would or did play, the kind of companions that were available, the past chosen. I will field some of this. I think that, in terms of the religion thing, I didn't really know where we were going with that. Where you were going with that until the very end. But either that was a conscious decision from you or we kind of slipped into it, which is they're both fine. Obviously, the nature of the story that you created would facilitate at least the discussion about that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very interesting. In terms of like the kinds of companions, like I knew it would be it was like a ragtag team. Because, like you said, in terms of writing, there are some areas that we're very much cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, and obviously there was that, and I think we've already covered how like it was weird but great going into it as like a survival adventure and then a one-on-one, then a town.
Yeah, the shifts. So in answer to the religion question... I actually saw it playing a little bit less than it did. I think...
Well, Sam, even less than it was?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't really for the first... You're like, is it old gods? I mean, yeah, of course it's fucking old gods. I live in the woods with this one-legged man.
Yeah, for sure. But I didn't expect you to question other characters as much around their reasoning for choosing X or X.
That's just me. That's Sam.
Yeah, I know it is. And I probably should have seen that coming. But also... because it's one of the themes of the book, like it is going to be there. I just didn't think it would be. I didn't think it would be as modern in terms of that communication. And this is because I probably because as soon as we start talking about like the Bible, I have very little knowledge of the Bible.
Yeah.
Personally, I probably know more about Nordic mythology than I do around like real time Bible stuff. You know what I mean? Especially without it just being the standard reasoning like normal quotes, eye for an eye and all that sort of stuff.
Don't covet thy neighbour's ox or wife, can't remember.
I think it's meant to be both, but also probably because in...
No, go on.
Nope, yeah.
Finish the thought.
It was finishing the thought. So it's probably because back in those times, an ox would be seen more valuable than a wife. That's all I was going to say.
That's not how I see the world, Ed, but
that's fine.
That's all I'm saying is that you're saying that you personally believe it, and
you can go fuck yourself, Sam. hey man, it's a book of control. That's all I'm going to say there.
Whoa, Jesus Christ!
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You want a hot take? That's where it comes from.
Wow.
So that, and that's why, you know, I don't really know too much of it. Actually, I can't really say that without really reading it and spending the time.
You sound like you made your own mind up there, buddy.
Yeah, I do. I'll take my time.
This is incredible.
I'm floundering, Sam. I'm floundering. Help me, please.
Go on. No. Go on. Finish the thought.
So that's that.
Tell us what you think of trans athletes. Let's go.
Good God. Could you imagine if that's what this podcast was?
Whoa, just, anyways.
Here's a just hot, controversial
we call it hot
thought
topic. And, we just say stuff.
Bad. Terrible. Should not do that. So I didn't expect it to function as much as it did. Obviously, it is part of the story and everything, but the book, as in the setting book, manages that really well, and I don't think I have enough knowledge personally to manage that well as far as the storytelling piece goes from,
so don't center the story on it,
exactly, except going, this person likes Jesus, this person likes old gods, like this person is all about big God in the sky, that's where it all comes from, and then just loosely doing some research and then trying to make it backwards compatible. That's all.
Nice.
What was the final part of that question?
I think that was it. It was just about shifts in expectations about companions and religion and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. Right. Well, look, listen, I think that's about it, right? I think we're at this position. Now, as we've said, we're going to have a little break.
Mm-hmm.
3 weeks, 4 weeks to just collect our thoughts. I can start drafting out some story bits. I'll be releasing some of the behind-the-scenes documents throughout that time anyway.
Nice.
So like feel free, you can still get involved on the Discord. We're not going to be not like looking at that and all that kind of thing. It's just, I want to get my head down. Now that I've done one of these, it's going to be easier.
Not the template, but the blueprints for what it should look like.
Yeah, exactly. The next step in the story and how that could be fun. But it is going to be, because I've already got a little bit of a draft in my head.
It's Air Dwarf just gets all classic, fat and Elvis-y.
It's a classic second movie in a trilogy.
Ooh, the big picture narrative moves on, but we put a lot of the main characters into a holding pattern to learn about themselves because the world around them doesn't need any help in developing.
Sure.
That's the second. We'll see. That's the second.
Okay,
thing,
maybe it's not. Maybe I'm going third first. Then, if that's the case, but we'll
see.
Going first.
We'll
see what
You've
happens.
Just done the first. This guy. Give him an orange T-shirt. thinks he's the mutt's nuts, doesn't he?
Wicked. All right. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. We've been Starter Set. This is whatever it is. Roll well, and we will see you in 3 weeks.
He thinks he's Terry Chambalay or whatever that bloke was before. Goodbye.